Okay, my full name, Lana Marie Washinawatuk. It's going to be that. And my Indian name is Paman Mokwe, which means taking care of others. And my last name, Washinawatuk, means the concerned one. And I am a Menominee Indian from Wisconsin. I am the daughter of five children. Two are half sisters, and one is a half brother, but I have two biological brother and sister. And I am the youngest daughter. So there's three of us with my mom and dad. My education, I went through school. I graduated. I did graduate, but I went through several different school curriculums because my dad was a iron worker and we moved all over the United States. So through all of that, I got a diploma, but all my credits would go were all over the place, but they were managed to gather them all together. And I graduated in May 1991 from Flandreau Indian School. And I did pretty good with honors too. So employment is right now. I am a full-time employed full-time. I work for the KMHA Radio 91.3 in Newtown, North Dakota. I am the traffic and billing director and do some DJ talk show. I didn't tell you that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Tell me about
God that. Blessed me with that. So, and so I'm enjoying that opportunity right now. But I did go through quite a few employments. I've always managed to be in management or directing something. So I think there's a little message there for me if I look back at my history. Where did I grow up? Well, there's like five different states of growing up, Wisconsin, Illinois, Detroit, Michigan, Minnesota, and Iowa, Muscatine. Again, because my dad was an iron worker. So I seen a lot of racism, a lot of, for being Indian, we ended up in a lot of different communities, mostly was white communities, and so there was a lot of racism there where we got teased for being Indian. The kids, we'd get on the buses and they'd do the little woo, you know, where's your teepees and spick and span. They called me and my sister and just did mean things to us with the lockers at school. And
so now was this in Wisconsin?
No, one was in Minnesota. Duluth, Minnesota, and then down in Iowa, Muscatine, there was another girl. She was black, though, and then we were walking through the park. But, you know, we liked everybody, but they treated us different. And then she took our lunches and smashed them all on the ground, and I had to fight. So, I don't know if I should talk about that.
But it's your life.
Yeah.
Talk about it, anything and everything.
So there was a lot of violence in my life for me from, you know, high grade school and, you know, growing up and just trying to fit in, because every time we'd get to school, it was like we wouldn't finish the school year because my dad would come in and we'd have to drag up. That's what he called it, because he was ironworking. Time to drag up. So then we'd move to the next city, the next state, and my dad would have to go there first and then we would meet him. So it was kind of all over the place, met a lot of people, and I don't have a like some kids, people talk about their, like, friend from, oh, we grew up together when I was a kid, we went to Head Start or whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't have any of those. I just have from high school, I think, the last year. So that was growing up all over the place. Lots of different races. We were in the Chinese community. We were in the Mexican communities. We were in the Asian communities. That was really different. But my dad got us a place wherever he could find us a home. Mm-hmm. And then mom made it home. So next one. Okay. And my experience as a child was, I don't know if I should have talked about, like, alcoholism was a great, and when I grew up, my mom and dad drank a lot.
Yes, talk about your whole experience, you know, whether when you grew up, where these things took place, so where were you? I think that matters too.
Okay. Well, when I was growing up, then that goes back to, I think one of the one times I do remember mostly was in Milwaukee when I was probably maybe six or seven. Because I remember my dad was talking about something when we were home last month, and my mom would drink, and my dad was working all the time, but she was, you know, an active alcoholic, but she was really mean to me. So she did stuff like tied me up and put me in closets, and, you know, it was always me getting beat up with a stick, and then she'd pull my ear till I would, like, pass out. And then there was a time, that's what my dad was talking about last month, was he remembered a time, because we were coming from Milwaukee and we were going up to the reservation for Easter, and my Uncle Biddy was following behind us, and then we got behind, we pulled over off the road because... Okay, growing up, I think the one thing I do remember was, like I said, that I was like five or six, I don't know, in Milwaukee, and then we were going up north for Easter, and my mom had pulled my ear. I don't know what I was doing in the car, but anyways, I came to and I was on the back of the car, hood of the car, and then my dad and my uncle were standing over me, and I remember my dad asking my mom what happened, and she wouldn't tell him, and then I had to look at her, like, and she gave me a look like, don't tell, you know, because my dad didn't hit us at all. He was not that he didn't want to discipline us, but he just didn't do the disciplining like my mom. So anyways, I remember those times, how my mom would be and then taping me up in the closet and leaving me there, and it was just terrible. And then I remember we moved to another time. This was when I was a little older. We moved to Iowa, Muscatine. And I was down there. And there was some stuff going on. I know my mom was still drinking, but my dad was sober then. But there was some stuff going on, and it just was weird with my mom. And then she was hitting me. And then the room had these big mirrors in it or whatever. And I don't know. She just wouldn't stop hitting me and just kept hitting me and hitting me and hitting me. And nobody else was home. And I just remember her being that evil and mad. And so my dad came home from work or whatever, and I was a little sore or whatever. But I couldn't tell him nothing, like what had happened, what she did to me. So... that went unlooked, and then even my sister and brother sometimes didn't know what was happening to me, because I didn't want to tell them, and I was scared, because I always wanted my mom to love me. When I think about things, like, I just wanted her to love me, and maybe that was her way of telling me she loved me, but it wasn't a good way. And then here we moved to Shawano, Wisconsin, because they finished the job down there in Iowa. So my dad got another job up in Tomahawk, Wisconsin. So we moved back home. And then that's when things got pretty bad, where my mom left my dad. They divorced. And my dad left us with my mom. And that was at the age of 12. I remember that. I was 12 years old, and we were all in the front room, and my dad was crying, and, you know, everything was going on. And so my dad was taking my brother, and me and my brother were really, really close. We did everything together. And he left with my brother. Then us girls stayed there. Well, I was hanging out with this one girl, and we went to the store, and my mom was drinking a lot, and the guy she met moved in, and he was a drinker too, and he was really, you know, I just didn't like him or whatever. But anyways, I was with the girl, and we were at the Super Value, stole a candy bar, and we got caught. So I went to the jail. They took us to the police department. My mom had to come get me. and came home. And then she made me take off all my clothes. And then she found a big board and then she started beating me like the last time. But it was worse because she had this board and then she broke my arm. And then there was like these big welts all over my body. And she, I know she was drinking. So the next day I had to go to school and I had phi ed that day and you had to bring a note in. So I went in to ask her for a note and I just remember her saying, "You ain't getting no damn note, just tell them what the hell you did," you know. So I went to school and then I went to gym class and the teacher wanted to know why I couldn't participate in physical education. And I said, "Well, I hurt my arm." And then she was like, "Well, let me look at your arm." And then I lifted my arm, my shirt up, and there was like the board marks and my arm was broken. So next thing you know, all the social workers and the police came and stuff like that. And I got took away from my mom and then my dad had to come get us. And I felt bad because I didn't want to leave my mom. I loved her. And here they were taking me away. And then I was scared again because I didn't want her to hurt me again. For she told me to tell them, you know. And I said, "Well, I got in trouble. I stole a candy bar." And my mom, because when they start questioning me. But anyways, got myself all fixed up. And then they sent us to a foster care because my dad had to drive like from Duluth, Minnesota. That's where my dad went for the next job. So he came down, got us. And then we were up there. And I was really messed up from that. And while I was waiting for my mom, I ran away from I ran away from the foster home. Got to a phone and tried to call my mom. And when I did get a hold of her, she told me, you know, some bad things. And I can't remember, but not to call her ever again. And something like that. And so I hung up the phone and I went back to the foster home. It was on a farm somewhere. So I waited for my dad and I felt really alone then because my mom didn't want me no more. And then my dad came finally, picked us up. We went up to Duluth, Minnesota. He was sober, going to AA meetings, had us involved in Alateen, and we were trying to, you know, get through our lives sober. And we did fairly well, but there was a lot of issues going on. So he got us into counseling, but it still didn't help, I don't think. And then at that time, he found Flandreau, the boarding school. Somebody recommended it to him. So we all got sent to Flandreau in 1984. 485 school year for freshmen. So went out there, had fun, met a lot of people, and then got kicked out. And I got kicked out with two Menominee women, girls, that were going back to Keshena, Wisconsin, where my mom was at. And I again wanted to go by my mom. So I switched my ticket and ended up in Wisconsin instead of going to Duluth when they ship you out. So I got back to Wisconsin and showed up at my mom's door. And then she was looking at me like, "What the fuck are you doing here?" And I was like, "Well, I got kicked out of school." And so then she's like, "Well, you might as well come in." And I remember that it was snowing. And so I went in the house. And anyways, I was staying there. And a lot of drinking and partying she was doing. Her and Paul, that was his name. And they would go out a lot and she'd come home and he'd beat her up and stuff. And then I was always trying to help and keep her safe. Well, then one night they came home and they were drinking and he turned on the radio and then the speakers were like really loud. So I unplugged them from up because he put some speakers upstairs. So I unplugged the speakers and then he come charging up there and then he was like swearing at me and saying things. And then I grabbed my table and then I just flung it at him. And then he jumped on top of me and started pounding me and beating me up and then dragged me out of my room down the stairs. And then my mom got involved and he was beating her up and me up. And then I ran out the door because he had her. So I ran out the door and then all of a sudden I heard a gun go off and then fell to the ground way down on the road. I looked over and I thought I was like dead and it was cold. It was like getting morning light, daylight. And I just looked up and I seen him standing on the porch with a big shotgun, and he was shooting at me. So, and I was all beat up and I didn't know if I was dead or not. And then I got up, and because I was laying like in this, the puddle was had ice over it or whatever, and I broke the ice on it. And so I was laying there, and then that's when I looked up and seen him. And so then I got up and ran to Carol Lynch's house, and I got there, and then I called my Uncle Issa and I called the police, and then they all, my Uncle Issa came. And then he went over there and pounded him up and stuff. And then the police came, and I don't know, it just turned into a big thing. And again, my mom was mad and didn't want me there and threw, you know, my stuff all out and just chose him or whatever. And then they flew off to California. He avoided the charges or whatever. And so she left me, abandoned me. And then I had to go find an aunt to stay with. So I went and stayed with an aunt and lived there for a long time, because my mom never came back and she stayed out in California with him. And then I managed to live with my aunties and uncles, going to school on and off. And then my sister came to the reservation, and then she got pregnant and got involved with somebody. So then I moved in with her and stayed there through like 10th, 11th grade. And then I met my boyfriend and fell in love, thought, and got pregnant. Yeah. And here ended up, No, my mom was still there. She had to stay from the court. Paul took off after the beating. Yeah. Paul took off, and then she was still there. And then we were at the house, and then I met a boy, and I got pregnant. And she must have knew I was pregnant. And I didn't know, because I didn't know nothing about sex or nothing. She never talked about it, or nobody did. Mm-hmm. And she called my aunt, and then they took me to the clinic. And the next thing you know, I was driving to Milwaukee with my aunt, my grandma, and my mom. And I went in this big gray building, and then that's all I remember, just feeling my whole life, like it was just awful feeling that just ripped out of me. Something died that day. And anyway, so I had an abortion. And we got back to the reservation, and then it was the next day. I went to school trying to, you know, understand everything that happened. And then I came home, and then everything was gone in the house. That whole day she spent, she must have let people just take whatever and left me a bag of clothes. But everything was gone. The house was completely empty, and she flew off to California by him. So then my aunt pulled in, that's how that happened, and she said, well, I'm supposed to take care of you. So I went with my auntie Tinker and went live there for a little while, but her son was kind of mean because he had a girlfriend. And then, I don't know, she said something, so we all were arguing and fighting. And then I packed my bags and walked down the road, and then my Uncle Biddy lived down the road from where my auntie Tinker lived. So I went and moved in there, stayed there. Then my sister got her life, started making baby, and so I moved in with her, and then went to school, and then that's when I met my boyfriend, who I got pregnant by, and then he was abusive, but I stayed with him and had a baby, and we tried to live together with my sister and stuff, but there was a lot of drinking and drugs involved in there, and there's before him, I think my mom, I'm trying to think when she came back. She came back for a while. Anyways, some part in there, I mean, there, I don't know, it's kind of a little blurry, but she did come back and we were there, and she, and I was hurt about a boy, and then she was saying things, and all I remember was she pulled out a bottle of Seagram 7 and 7-Up and sat at the other end of the table, and then handed me a big bottle of pills and told me make sure I took all of them. So I sat on the other end of the table, and she sat on the other one. And then I was taking these pills, and next thing you know, I woke up, and I was in apparently I was in the ICU for like a week, and she, you know, nobody heard from her or nothing, didn't know where she went or anything. And, but she never came and seen me. So I almost died, I guess. I don't know all the details, but my sister said she, when I was in the hospital, she came to me, and it was like, she had took my hand and put it on her belly and said I couldn't go nowhere because I needed to help her take care of the baby. Mm-hmm. So I guess after that, I must have came back to world or whatever. I didn't die, and then I got released, and my aunt came pick me up, I think. I don't even remember. But it was sad because my mom never came. Then she was gone again out of my life and didn't hear from her or talk to her again. And then I met my boyfriend and then got pregnant. And that was abusive, just a lot of abuse. Like 7 years we were together, and drinking. And I didn't really get into pot, but I would smoke it because he did. And, you know, and then I didn't want my baby to not have a dad. So I stayed with him. And then his parents, we lived with them. And they drank too, but not like in the house and stuff. But, you know, when me and Bryant got to leave a lot because they would take care of the baby. They, today, when you look at it, enabled us, but they took care of the baby. And then it just was that whole circle of abuse. Like, and I didn't know how to get out of it because I thought that was what he loved me, and we had a baby together. And then I got pregnant again, and then I was in the same circle. You know, it was like fight, break up. And then we had Donovan, and that was when I finally, the last beating was, you know, I found him at the bar with some other girl, but I didn't say anything to him, but he seen me walk in, and then I just decided then I'm done, and I was leaving. Like, you know, I didn't say nothing to him, and then he came out and, you know, grabbed me and start whipping me around like I did something, and yeah, and beat me up. And that's where I got that scar on my head, was because he slammed my head into the gas tank and then just left me laying there. And anyways, that was it. And I never went back to him. I stayed away from him. But I went on my little life, and I was in the city. Then I moved to Green Bay. I moved off the reservation because I was on the reservation with Bryant. And got to the city, and then things just got more increased in violence. Met a football player, and, you know, for Green Bay Packers, and got involved in that lifestyle. Like, you know, and it was kind of fast paced, and, you know, the glamorous life and doing fancy things and stuff. But I managed to find another abusive, you know, he was abusive and controlling and hitting and scared to leave. And then I felt like I couldn't leave because it was so fancy and fun, and all the money and the nice car, and me being, you know, pretty, it was like, oh, you know, I'm cool or whatever. But we did a lot of drinking, and he did, you know, drinking too, and out in the clubs. But then I got away from him, and I was dating somebody else, but he got through the apartment. It was a locked complex, but he got through, and then there was somebody at the door with like flowers, and I thought it was my new boyfriend. And then I opened up the door, and it was him, and he dropped the flowers down and just started beating me, and ended up in the hospital. And we were going out that night, but he also hit my son. And so we were all down in the hospital, and then they took me to the Golden House, it was called, in Green Bay. So I went there, and my face was all puffed up. I had like a shoe print on. So the left side of my face always, like, if somebody looks at me, like, I can feel it. Mm-hmm. But it looks different now. Like, and then the doctors thought I was never going to see again out of my eye, but I can see really good yet. Mm-hmm. And my lip is, you know, I don't look too rough, but anyways, it's there. So there was the violence again in my life. And And then through all this chaos, I ended up pregnant with my middle child, Derice. And there was a lot of things going on. The violence was high, intense, and my partner, who was really bad, burned my apartment down and was looking for me. And that's when my dad got concerned and intervened, because it was around Thanksgiving, and then I went up to the I was on the res partying, but they couldn't find anybody. The apartment was burned down, the fire department and everything contacted up north, and people were looking for me, and I didn't even know it. And so anyways, I ended up my dad found out, and then when I got there, everybody was all, "Oh my God," and hugging me and like, "Where were you?" And "Your place is all burnt up. We didn't know if you were in there," and this and that. And I don't know, I just didn't think like how serious. But anyways, a week later, I went back up by my dad. I had to go clean out my apartment, figure my life out, and hide from him. And then my dad signed me in. So I was really mad. And then I found out I was pregnant. And it wasn't from that guy, it was from another guy. So I have that little chaos in my life where it was like, oh,
So, how old are you at this time?
22.
22.
22 years old. Reese was born in 1994.
Okay.
And well, I was 23 probably, because Donovan was born in 92. So in between that 2 years, there was a lot of stuff that went on, from leaving the reservation and going into the city. And Derice was born in 94, August 18th, 1994. So good year and a half of just crazy drugs, drinking, clubbing, partying, men just out there and getting beat up and thinking that was all love. And then I went through and my dad signed me in, and then found out I was pregnant. And then the racial thing came, because I knew it was a black man. I was pregnant by a black man. And everybody was like, "Oh, well, we don't know how we're gonna accept a biracial child." And there's really heavy racism in the Fish family. It just wasn't heard of, and my grandma had 17 kids, so it was like, how do I bring this little girl into this world? And then I almost had an abortion, but then I didn't. Something told me not to, and then I was just like, I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna keep this baby and take care of it if it's just me and her, or him. I didn't know at that time, and so that's why I told my dad, I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna have it. If you don't want to be a part of our life. I remember sitting in that family group meeting. So, anyways, I had Doris, and she came out. She didn't look like she was black at all. She looked like a little native baby. She still does. People can't tell, but yeah, her dad is African American from Atlanta, and yeah, she had cute little curly hair. But what a blessing she was. And then I raised her by myself for like a whole year, and then I met an Indian guy, and we got together, and that was like in 96, 95, 96. Yeah, because Doris was like 1 year old, 2 years old. And then me and Mike got together, and then everything was all good, and I was sober. He was sober. But I also attracted something not good again, because he was abusive silently. Like, there was some stuff that was going on, but I ended up getting pregnant, and then I moved in with him, and we had Optigegic in 1997. I was 27 years old, and he came out of prison, and he had taken his brother's life when they were drinking in like 1990. He stabbed his brother one hit, and he nailed him right in the heart. They were fighting over some food or something, and anyways, him and Arlen and John, and then we're all down in Milwaukee drinking. And so I ended up trying to help heal him while we were together, because he would have issues, and there would be things that were happening. So I was like, honestly, felt like I was counseling him and trying to keep him into that good, and then I ended up pregnant. And so then we were kind of together, and he didn't want his baby to be without his dad either. But there was the silent, he didn't hit me. He He never hit me. Mike never put his hand on me. But it was just the silent abuse and verbal, like he would say things. Because I was white. I had white man in me. And then the whole thing with my daughter, who was black. He was mean about it. He would just be like, you know, you and that nigger child and stuff like that. And so, anyways, God revealed what was really going on after two kids. Because Kaya Love was born and she was 1 year old. I left on April 19th in 1990. Kaya Love was 127.99 in 2000. April 19th in 2000, I left Mike because I went in there and Doris wanted a hug and I always used to give her a hug and kiss goodnight because those were all my AA babies. Mm-hmm. And so I was like 30 years old and I went in there. She was like, Mommy, I need my hug. So I was going to go give her a hug and Mike's like, no, I got it. So he went down there and all of a sudden something told me to go in there. You know, so I got up and went and I was going down the hall and Mike stopped me. He's like, what are you doing? I'm like, well, I'm just going to go give her a hug. And he's like, I did already. And he stood back in my way and I was like, get out of the way. And I go in there and then Doris was there with the blankets curled up, clenching on her fist and over her face. And you could just see her eyes all red. And I was like, what's wrong? And she was sitting there and then I picked her up kind of. I said, what's the matter? Why are you crying? And then she was looking at him and then I just, you know, don't you fucking look at him. You look at me. I'm here for you. What happened? And then she just dropped the blankets and she like, he choked me. And and I just turned around and told him to get out and, you know, and just was swearing and crying and, you know, I had to take care of her. And so he left and then, the next day, I packed up my kids, and I knew I couldn't stay. I knew from everything I went through, what my mom did, picking Paul over me, and, you know, I just seen it repeat itself, like, I gotta go. And I left him, and we moved, and it was just us kids. And then I went through the big custody thing with Mike. He had a lot of money, because they were getting all their per cap, and... Anyways, I came back late. Well, the judge awarded I have the papers that show I got custody. The attorneys that did the review and they interviewed people on his side, the guardian ad litem, they call him. Anyways, they awarded me full custody and said the dad still needed, you know, some further developing and, for, you know, stuff like that. But they gave me full custody. And then I had my panel of people that were there to support me out of his tribe that were there to support me. But his mom worked for the judge for 25 years. They didn't even hear any evidence or nothing. We went in there and Judge Kennedy's like, I reviewed this case and I'm overturning the whole decision, giving the father full custody of these two children because he's financially stable and secure. And my whole life changed. Everything, I felt like I died. I went into like a whiteout. Everything was gone. And I walked out there and he got my two babies and I went drank. I went, got a 12 or a Coors Light and just drank and cried and just felt, I was mad at God. I was really mad. I was so hurt. And, you know, I stayed sober, had all these, you know, backup. Why did he do this? And then on one of the visits, my daughter, we had to go drop him off and I was late, 8:01. And Mike came out and he ripped the babies out of the window and was swearing around like, you can't be late and shit, I'll go to the court and make sure you never see them. And they were just babies and he's walking away and my babies are over his shoulder screaming with their arms extended like they wanted to be with me. And all I could do was cry. And I pulled out of the yard and Doris was sitting in the front seat and I was driving and just that whole thing was reflecting back in my mind, you know, and Doris is like 4 or 5 and I'm 30. Yeah, was 30 years old and driving down the road and I knew where that turn was. I knew where that tree was and I was coming on it and I was just like, you know, I don't want to do this. I don't want to live here no more. I don't want to do this to my babies. They're young enough to not know me and they don't have to suffer. And I was going to drive into that tree, and I had my hand on the middle of the truck, and I was like going fast, and I don't know what that little girl, but I think today it was God. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden she just put her hand on my hand and she said, I'm glad I don't have anybody to take me away from you. Oh. And then I just pulled over, stopped, and it was like God told me I have somebody to take care of. Uh-huh. Take care of her. Mm-hmm. And then I just grabbed her and hugged her up and told her I was sorry. And I don't think she knew what I was going to do. Maybe uh-huh. she did. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Mm-hmm. And then we survived that night. And then it was like not even a couple nights later, something else happened with them kids and Mike. Mm-hmm. So I go upstairs and I tell Doris, and she'll tell it too. Like, she'll never forget that when I came up there. And I said, Doris, you want to go someplace special with me? And she said, yeah. And I had made these ropes downstairs. Mm-hmm. And I was going to go hang us. You know, I was going to do her first and then me.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And she was ready to go. And I had everything all fixed up downstairs. And anyways, I was going down there. And I went got her. And I said, okay, I'll be right back up. And then the phone rang. And I was like, it was like late at night, like 12:30, 1 a.m. Mm-hmm. Who the heck is calling me at this time? And here it was the chairman, mm-hmm. my friend Gus.
Yeah.
He called, and I was like, hey, what are you calling me for, you know? He goes, oh, I was just thinking about you, you know, how are you doing? Mm-hmm. And he still don't remember that, but, you know, it was a moment I think God was working in my life, and mm-hmm. and then we were talking, and anyways, I didn't end up hanging. Getting to that point of hanging us, we've survived, we lived again. And then that was the last attempt of suicide through all that losing my kids. But I ended up moving to Green Bay after that and went down to the city and got more deeply involved in the drugs and alcohol. Started to sell drugs, picked up the cocaine, got involved in that, and that was from 2002 till 2009. I was selling drugs and drinking and living that lifestyle, and that was all fighting, guns, everything you could think of was involved in that whole 8 years of being in that lifestyle. I was going to college, but I quit because the lifestyle doesn't let you. And then got into two or three abusive relationships through that. Didn't visit my kids as scheduled, you know, like I had booked. It was just hard. I stuffed myself with all the drugs and alcohol and, you know, just kept thinking I don't need to visit them, they're better off without me. And mm-hmm. but then I'd miss them, and then when I'd come off of my coke binges or whatever, I would like, I want to see them, so I'd go get them on a scheduled visit. And you know, it was always a problem too, because Mike reminded me I'm not consistent, and I wasn't. Mm-hmm. And I hated hearing that, so it kept me away from them. But then mm-hmm. I still stayed involved in their lives, and you know, it was just crazy. And then I got arrested in 2009. I was sitting at a stoplight praying because I was going to deliver some drugs. And I was just really tired in my life. Like, I can't do this. God, I don't know how to get out of it. And 2 weeks later, on December 23rd, 2009, the police pulled me over, and I was loaded with all kinds of drugs. And the drug dealer just came from my house the day before, left me 2 kilos of cocaine, and everything was in my house. And the only thing they found in my house was a little 50 bag, you know, a small amount of cocaine, and then what my aunt told them that I had given her. So they charged me with possession and delivery. Even though I didn't exchange no money, they still charge you for that. Mm. But I went to jail and then got the charges, and they're still on, but got out of jail. And in jail, though, I was praying they wouldn't find what was in my house, and they didn't. So the charges, because they initiated a search warrant to go to my house and find out what was in there. And it didn't get revealed. So I told God, if you don't, and I was waiting because they didn't give me my charges right away. And then I went into the police department with a big bag of stuff on me and then went to the bathroom and was able to get rid of it all. And right under there, you know, noses, whatever. I just know God had something to do with how that all, because my hand came out of the handcuff and, you know, everything just, because I would have went to prison for probably 10, maybe 20 years if they would have found out what I had on me and what was in my house, but it didn't work out that way. I think God wanted something good to happen. So that's what I was praying, like, don't let him find it and I'll change my ways. So when I got out of jail, I made bail. And I went home. Well, my dad was with me. And then he's like, well, when are you going to come up to the house? Because you get kicked out of the city, kicked out of the house. You know, they don't let drug dealers stick around. So I told my dad, well, I got to go do some stuff and then I'll be up there. So that's when I went home and I pulled all the drugs out of the hiding spot we had. And all of a sudden there was a big bang on the door. And I was like, thought it was the FBI or the police. And here it was my dad. So I was like, who is it? And he's like, Dad. And then I just start crying then because I felt ashamed because of who my dad is on the reservation. He's like 30 some years holding a meeting and well known in the community. And here I was, you know, big cocaine addict. And anyways, so he comes in and he looks and he's like, because I just dropped the stuff on the ground when he said Dad. I was like, oh my God, I was so happy it was him and not the DEA. And Harry came in and he was like, what the hell, what is going on, what is this, you know? And that's when I tell him this is what was really going on. And so I'm just trying to dump all this. So we went in the bathroom and everybody, him and his girlfriend, helped you know, throw it, flush it down the toilet and down the sink. We were breaking it all up. And I didn't, there was a moment when I wanted to, when I was holding it, like, dang, I could make like $500 off this little bit, you know, really fast. I need money, I'm going to be going to jail and I might go to prison. And but then my dad's like, what are you doing? And then I snapped out of it and I poured it down the sink. And but it was a good thing he came, because otherwise maybe I don't think I would have done what I was supposed to do. So God set up another, you know, lined me up with the right people at the right time. And so then I stayed sober, got out of there, and just met the right people, kept falling into my place, went to, what do you call them things they were having, it's in the church, the Christian thing, two, three days, I forgot what she called it, but we had went to this church thing down in Milwaukee, and I got saved, I went to the altar, and, you know, rededicated my life to God. Because I did do it one time when I was 20. I was in Milwaukee when I was drinking and partying down there. Right after I had Donovan, I moved down to Milwaukee for like 2-3 months and was dating somebody, and his family was involved in the church. But yeah, that time I went to Milwaukee with my friend and got resaved and just start living for God, and everything changed. And so it's been like that ever since. Like, everything in my life, I just keep going back to, I'm sober because of God and being saved. And, you know, there's things I do different. I mean, I'm not saying I don't believe in the Bible, but I still practice, like, the native ways. I'm still, you know, I don't worship it like that, but it's still a part of me where I'm combining it both. Like, they are, both of them are in the same thing, God and the Creator. So I mean, it's been that way for me. And but I can see now a little bit, learning through this, like, all the abuse that I went through. And my mom right now today banned me out of her life again. I haven't talked to her for 9 months now. She told me to consider her dead to me. And so I've been just praying for that. And but I didn't feel like I did, you know, 20, maybe 15 years ago, because she was never there for me. And it's always been like this with her, in and out of my life for a little bit, and mean. So
Now, what what tribes are, is your mom and dad enrolled in?
My mom is Menominee and Winnebago.
Okay.
Yeah, my grandma Fish is Winnebago, so I could go on the Winnebago road. But then my grandpa's a Menominee, and then my dad's side is Menominee, and my grandma's a white lady. So that's where the white comes in. Or I don't know if it's French or...
Yeah.
But yeah, but a lot of the struggle was around being drugs and alcohol. My mom and dad were alcoholics. Mm-hmm. Then my dad sobered up, and then I went into my own, you know, drugs and alcohol, and found, you know, the drugs more comforting for me. Because I also found out, too, I have ADHD or whatever they want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
But the cocaine, I guess, the reason, through counseling, like they said, that I was probably so addicted to it, was because it was calm, helped me calm. Mm-hmm. But I wasn't a daily,
yeah.
Like, I didn't use cocaine to daily function. I did it, like, every weekend.
Mm.
Or every couple of days,
yeah.
I'd be snorting, and then it was like just staying high on my own supply when I needed. So it was easy access, but
mm-hmm.
yeah, drugs and alcohol were probably the basis of everything. I don't think I would have did half the stuff or went through if there was alcohol.
So what was your turning point, looking back?
When I went to jail, when everything was there saying I could go to prison. I didn't know if I was gonna, I didn't know what was gonna happen. And the way it all happened, where I didn't get all them charges, I looked at that God really put his hand on me.
Mm-hmm.
And I could, I don't know, sometimes people think I'm weird or crazy. I don't, even my kids sometimes laugh at me when I say, God said... But that's what I felt like during that time. He said he was going to take care of me. Like, there was just,
mm-hmm.
even though I was scared,
mm-hmm.
I know that he was telling me something. But mm-hmm. I just couldn't hear him until I got later out of the, you know, the jail and things that were happening. Like, how did my hand come out of the cuff? How did they not find them drugs? Because it was so easy.
Mm-hmm.
There was a stool there. I just... wish people could right. walk through my glass, like, and know, like, how did they miss that?
Mm.
You know? And then there was some other things that were in the house that they missed. Like, they tore up the whole refrigerator, the freezer, the bathroom cupboards, all, they dumped out cereal all over. And like, this stuff was just really, you just went down the stairs and in that one room where there was no, we were redoing it, but the runners were there and there was a stool right there. Like, you just had to step up on that and pull that little board, and there you would have found all the drugs. But
mm-hmm.
I don't know, and they had their canine units and everything in there, and it wasn't found. So that was when I know I had to do something and stay on this road. And then I have a friend over there, Tanya. Her name is Matoxin. Very strong evangelist, is it called, when they're...
Yeah,
she put her hands on me and she just walked with me. And then it was like every weekend we were driving 2 hours to Milwaukee from Shawano for the Church Alive is worth the drive, little motto. And she'd have little groups of girls going, us Indian women, all Indians going down to Milwaukee and, you know, just getting into worship. And there was, the spirit was there and I felt alive. And mm-hmm. so that's what saved me. And Joyce Meyer. Listening to her, she really turned some things around. Because then my kids, it started to pour out into my kids. Mm-hmm. All three of my kids have been incarcerated for drugs.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the cycle is there. Mm-hmm. And so that's all I've been doing now, is just praying for them. And God is doing some work with them. But
mm-hmm.
that's definitely where my... help and how I overcame it was only by God. Can't give it to nobody else but him.
Is that everything?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so.